There is nothing wrong with your radio. Do not attempt to change the station. We are controlling the transmission. We control the volume. We can change the tone to a fuzzy bass or focus it to a tinny treble.
We can speed things up so fast you can hardly understand what's being said.
Or we can make things so slow you don't care.
We control the content. We can make it boring.
Mystery Playhouse.
Or moronic.
90.1.
We can even make it repetitive.
Mystery Playhouse.
Or moronic.
90.1.
We can even make it repetitive. It's our show. We can do anything we want, because this is...
Mystery Playhouse. 90.1.
And welcome to the Mystery Playhouse. I am the Count, your host of horror. Yes, come in. I want to show you some of our Mystery Playhouse portraits. This display is dedicated to the play Julius Caesar. And here we see him descending the Senate. His blood descending, that is.
Oh, yes.
You can tell the artist was very utilitarian with his subject. Here he had a lot of red paint to use up, huh? And this scene here is entitled Confused Undertakers, because Mark Anthony has just claimed that he's here to bury Caesar. And this one's my favorite. I've never seen such beautiful eyes in all my life, huh? No, but seriously, it's just too bad that none of the eyes have an accompanying head, huh? Yes, I think it's really neat how they watch you wherever you stand. Maybe they are afraid you'll stomp on them, huh? Perhaps that's why this particular painting is entitled The March of Eyes. That or else the artist confused the quote, "Beware the Ides of March," huh? Well, whatever the case may be, it's time for us to beware as we march on to tonight's super scary lineup. Suspense will bring us the two perfect alibi, and Weird Circle will provide the ghost's touch. And starting us all off, it's the shadow in the Isle of the Living Dead. So scary!
Forces of law and order is in reality Lamont Cranston, wealthy young man about town. As the Shadow, Cranston is gifted with hypnotic power to cloud men's minds so that they cannot see him. Cranston's friend and companion, the lovely Margot Lane, is the only person who knows to whom the voice of the invisible Shadow belongs. Today's story, The Isle of the Living Dead. Margot, Lamont, and Margot's aunt are on a cruise of the West Indies. It is early evening as their ship sails into the harbor of the little island of St. Jude. In spite of the thunderstorm that is in progress, Margot insists that they go ashore. Her aunt refuses. So only Lamont accompanies her as they walk down the ship's gangplank to a waiting launch.
You told me yourself that these tropical storms never last long.
But this is the rainy season, Margot.
Oh. Look out. One more slip and you'll swim to St. Jude.
Well, I don't see why they don't put escalators on these gangplanks. After all, they have them at the best department stores.
But the best department stores don't float. Yeah?
Yeah. Let me help you into the launch.
There we are. All right, pilot.
Yes, sir. Pass off your line.
into the pilot's cabin. Get out of this rain.
All right.
Go ahead, Margo.
Thanks.
Beth? Good evening. Kind of a rough night for you, isn't it, pilot?
Maybe.
Well, we'll get to shore all right, won't we?
Maybe.
Jolly fellow.
Are you a native of St. Jude?
Yes.
Well, it certainly looks like a beautiful place.
You think so?
Well, I...
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You have been here before?
No, we haven't.
Then wait and see before you talk.
He must be a big help to the Chamber of Commerce.
What's wrong with the island, pilot?
One half of island good. Other half belong to devil.
What do you mean?
Look through window. You see big hill over there?
Oh, yes. I can just barely make it out.
That plantation belong to devil lady, Mrs. Nesbitt.
Devil lady?
Yes. No one go near her place.
Why not?
You ever hear of zombie?
Zombies?
Zombies, Margot, are supposed to be dead men here in the tropics who walk about with no mind or soul. Native superstition. What about these zombies, Violet? Are there supposed to be zombies on the plantation? Well, answer me.
No talk to pilot when he steer boat.
He must have read that on a streetcar someplace. Come on, Lamont, let's go out on deck.
Yes. Yes, all right.
What do you suppose he meant, Lamont?
About the island? I don't know. Say, isn't that the young girl that played bridge with us on the boat?
Where?
Sitting back there in the stern.
Yes, of course. Betty Fulton. Lamont, she's crying. I wonder what the trouble is.
Well, let's find out.
Hello there.
Oh, hello, Margot. Lamont.
Oh, anything wrong, Betty?
No. No. That is... I'm leaving the ship.
Why, Betty?
I'm going to the island to look for my fiancé, David Belmont.
Well, that shouldn't be an occasion for sadness.
I'm afraid that something's happened to him. That's why I'm here. That's why I've come to this sinister, terrifying island.
Now, Betty. How do you know that something's happened to him?
Well, 6 months ago, he went to New York to find work. I heard from him regularly. And then one day, I received a letter telling me that he secured a job on the island of St. Jude.
And what kind of a job?
Something to do with a sugar plantation.
Sugar plantation? Lamont, isn't that the place that the pilot...
Well, there must be more than one sugar plantation, Margot. What happened next, Betty?
I never heard from him again. I wrote to the steamship company and learned that he had definitely come to St. Jude, so I came to New York and booked passage on the first ship.
But, Betty, there might have been a mix-up in the mails or any
no,
number...
No, I've heard too many strange things about the island of St. Jude. Now that I'm here and I feel the mystery of this tropical night, I'm sure something has happened to David.
Lamont, listen. What is it?
That is probably a native celebration. Why, of course. Look up there on the hill. See that faint line of lights bobbing along?
Lamont, that's on the plantations the pilot told us about.
Come on, Margot. We'll ask the pilot what all this means.
Oh, Lamont, do you suppose it can be zombies?
I don't suppose anything, yes. Pilot. Pilot, those lights moving along that hillside, what are they?
Lights?
Yes, and what are those drums we're hearing?
I hear no drums.
No drums, but...
I see no light.
Now, wait a minute. Are those zombies? Are they?
Ask Jandy. He know. Jandy know everything. He say drum mean death.
Jandy? Well, who is Jandy?
Well, we'll never learn from this one.
Come on. Margot. Did you find out what those lights are?
No, Betty.
Oh. Now you know what I mean about the island. It's taken David from me.
Betty, Margot and I have a day and a half to spend on this island. If it leaves your mind, we'll help you look for David. And believe me, we won't give up until he's found.
Lamont, perhaps we should have gotten one of the natives to guide us to the Nesbitt plantation.
I couldn't find anyone who'd take the job. All full of superstitious fear. Won't go near the Nesbitt place. I even had trouble hiring these saddle horses to make this trip tonight.
Is Mrs. Nesbitt the only plantation on the island?
No, Betty. There's one other. If we don't find David tonight, we'll visit there in the morning. Oh, look. Look ahead there. Isn't that someone standing in the road?
Yes. Perhaps he can tell us the way.
Get up. Get up there. Come on, we'll talk to him.
This little speed job I'm riding. Certainly must miss the old milk wagon.
I stay there. I wonder if you can help us. We are looking for the Nesbitt plantation.
Nesbitt?
Yes.
Nesbitt plantation?
Yes, yes.
Keep away! Keep away!
Hey, come back here! Come back!
He ran into the underbrush. Did you see his face, Lamont? That weird, half-starved face.
Yes.
Do you suppose he was a zombie?
No, please, both of you. Let's not have any more talk about zombies. This. The drums. Those same drums.
Oh, David.
Look, over there through the trees. There's a light.
And there's the plantation.
I hope so. Come on, get up, boy. Come on.
Lamont.
Yes, Margot.
While you were hiring the horses, I asked one of the natives about the zombies and the drums.
Yes?
He told me that when the tom-toms played, that meant that another body has risen from its grave to wander about the Nesbitt plantation.
Oh, of course, that's a native superstition.
Yeah, I wonder.
Look, there's a house right there.
Oh, boy. Oh, yes. Well, we better leave the horses here.
Will we find David? Will he be here?
Now, Betty, David's all right, and we'll find him.
A grim-looking place, isn't it? Here, we'll tie the horses to this tree. There we are.
That looks like the front door right over there, Lamont.
Good. Well, let's see what happens.
Oh, Lamont, I don't like any part of this business. It's so quiet here. It's almost like a...
Like a graveyard. Isn't that what you meant to say?
Well, no, no.
Well, it is. It is like a graveyard. Maybe David's graveyard.
I better knock again.
Maybe they just don't.
Quiet, Margo. Oh, good evening. We'd like to see Mrs. Nesbitt, please.
Yes?
Are you Mrs. Nesbitt?
Yes, I am. Won't you come in?
Well, thank you. This is Miss Lane, Miss Fulton, and I'm Lamont Cranston.
How do you do?
Well, I'm happy to meet all of you. Won't you come in the study?
Well, thank you very much.
Lamont, she isn't at all like
Margo.
I'm not at all as the natives told you I'd be. Wasn't that what you were going to say, Miss Lane?
Yes,
well... The islanders love to talk about anything or anyone. And as I'm a white woman living alone, well, I suppose I'm a good target, that's all.
Mistress, ma'am.
Well?
You need me more?
No, Mondo, you may go.
It's bad night tonight. I keep watch.
Go, Mondo.
I go.
The natives are always uneasy in this rainy season.
Yes. Mrs. Nesbitt, I'd like to explain the reason for our late visit tonight.
Yes?
We called on you to learn if you had ever heard of a young man here on the island named David Belmont.
David Belmont? No, I'm afraid I don't know him.
Oh, I hope
that there's another plantation on the island. Have you looked for him there?
No, we came to you first.
Well, I wish I could help you, but I'm afraid I can't.
I see. Well, it looks like...
What was that?
It sounds as if it were in this house.
No, couldn't be.
Now listen. That seems to come from under this room.
Now, don't be alarmed. I'll find out what the disturbance is. Mondo? Mondo!
Look! Over there at the window. Someone's looking in. That face, it's the woman.
Quiet, you little fool. There's no one at the window. I beg your pardon. But look, look, all of you. Do you see anyone there?
No. No, I don't.
I know. I saw someone... No, I didn't.
Now, Betty, Betty, don't, please.
You call, mistress, ma'am?
What was that noise, Mondo?
I find John D. outside. I chase him away.
But what was the noise beneath the house?
Noise beneath house?
Yes, those moons.
That was horses. Rain make them restless tonight.
Oh, of course, I'd forgotten. In the rainy season, we put the horses in the cellar under this room.
Mistress, ma'am, that attend to horses?
Yes, yes. I I'm afraid you must excuse me.
Well, of course, sir. We were leaving anyway.
Sorry to disturb you, Mrs. Nesbitt.
It's quite all right. Quite all right.
Mistress, ma'am, better tend to horses quick.
Yes, yes, Mondo. Good night, Miss Lane, Miss Fulton, Mr.
Cranston. Good night, and thank you anyway for...
Well, back where I come from, that's known as the bomb's rush.
She almost pushed us out that door.
Lamont, did you hear that servant speak of jaundice?
Yes.
And the pilot on the boat spoke of jaundice, too.
Yes, that's right. He said, ask Jondy. Jondy knows everything.
Why do you think Mrs. Nesbitt was so upset about the horses?
Because they're most unusual animals, Betty.
What do you mean, Lamont?
Well, do you remember those moans we heard in the house?
I don't see how I could forget them. Why do you ask?
That was the first time, Margot, I'd ever heard a horse moan with the vocal cords of a human being.
To the Isle of the Living Dead.
I believe there's an inn just down the street. We can rest there before we go to the other plantation in the morning.
Well, it's almost morning now, isn't it, Lamont?
No, it's only 2 o'clock, Margot.
Oh, I suppose it would be too much for us to go to that other plantation tonight.
Well, it'd be quite a journey on a night like this.
I've got to know something about David soon.
If David isn't at the other plantation, I'd like to pay another visit to our friend Mrs. Nesbitt.
Why, Lamont?
Oh, boy. Yeah, we'll leave the horses here. Well, someone's awake at the local inn.
Lamont, why do you want to go back to the Nesbitt place?
Well, for one thing, I'd like to learn more about those moans that came from her cellar.
They did sound human.
They were human, Margot.
What about this man, Jondy? The one who knows everything.
I very much enjoy meeting him, Margot. Well, shall we go in? Coming, Betty?
Yes.
Well, nightlife on St. Jude.
Which seems to consist of one large bar and piano, 2 small tables, and some local barflies.
Well, at least we're out of the rain. I don't know whether I want coffee or a clothes wringer.
Margot, I don't know how to thank you both for practically risking pneumonia just for my sake.
Oh, it's all right, Betty. But here, let's not stand here and drip all over the floor. If we must make puddles, let's do it at the table. What's going on over there?
I don't know. There seems to be a crowd gathered around someone at the end of the bar.
Watch him do this one, eh?
Well, what are we waiting for?
Oh, come on, Betty.
Look, Lamont. The center of attraction seems to be one of the natives.
Yes. What's he up to? His eyes closed, swaying back and forth in rhythm.
And that stupid grin on his face.
He's saying something, listen.
Why, I can't, old boy. I really can't, don't you know? I mean, it's quite important.
Why, he talks like a cultured Englishman.
So sorry and all that.
Go on, give us some more. That's not enough.
Look, he's holding out his hat and they're putting money in.
More money?
That's odd. Now he's talking in a native voice.
And just a moment ago, he spoke like an Englishman.
Let's find out about this. I beg your pardon, sir.
Yes?
Who is this man?
Oh, just one of the natives.
Yes, but his speech.
First he spoke perfect English, and then he reverted to a guttural native voice.
That's why we're throwing money in his hat. This man is sort of half-witted drunkard. He's a character around these parts because he's been gifted with a remarkable talent for imitating any sound he hears.
No, I see. I've been told of such cases.
It's rather uncanny when you first hear it.
Yes, I should say it is.
Now, look, he's working up in another imitation. You see, he sings.
Hey, I just snuck in here for a quick pick-me-up. Now, don't, for heaven's sake, tell my wife.
He just impersonated Clancy, the storekeeper. It was perfect.
Isn't he amazing, Lamont?
Yeah. Now, most folks feed him liquor and money to keep up on the local gossip.
You see, he repeats anything he's heard in the voice of the person who said it.
Well, more money? More money for Jandy?
Jandy? Did he say Jandy?
Yes, that's his name.
More money for Jandy?
Lamont, he must be the one that was around the Nesbitt place tonight. The one the pilot spoke to us about.
Yes, Jandy.
Money for Jandy?
Give him some money, Lamont. Money. Let's see what happens.
All right. Jandy, here's some money for you.
Yeah.
Jandy, listen to me.
Can you talk like Mrs. Nesbitt, the plantation owner?
Mrs. Nesbitt.
Come on, Chandi.
Lamonti's closing his eyes. Swaying back and forth.
Yes. I think he's going to talk. Listen.
Listen closely to me, do you hear?
It's Mrs. Nesbitt's voice. Exactly.
From this night on, you're my slave. You must obey me. You have your orders. Now do as I command.
Lamont, who do you suppose she was talking to?
Quiet, Margot. He hasn't finished.
Yes, mistress. Yes, mistress, I do as you command.
No! Oh, no!
Lamont!
Betty. Betty, what's the trouble, Betty?
The young lady there. Where is he?
Who, Betty?
That man, Chandy.
Why, he's... where did he go?
He just ran out.
No, find him, find him.
Well, what is it, Betty? Why do you want Chandy?
Because that voice that answered Mrs. Nesbitt was my fiancé, David.
Mondo?
Yes, mistress, ma'am.
What's that lantern you're carrying? Keep it dry.
Yes, mistress, ma'am.
Rain or no rain, they're going out into the fields and work. Crop will be ruined if they don't. Swine eating my food, caring for them. Mondo, watch that lantern.
Yes, mistress, ma'am.
It's all their fault the rains have come, and they'll suffer for it. They'll be punished. We must hurry, Mondo. Drug will wear off. I don't give each another injection.
Mondo, no like to be around when you stick needles in men's arms.
Mondo, open that cellar door.
No, make me go in with them.
I said open that cellar door.
No, mistress, ma'am. Not be with ma'am. I open.
Close it quickly. Quiet, you fools. Now listen to me, all of you. I don't expect you to know what I'm saying, but listen anyway. You understand that you're no longer men, you're swine in chains, bound together. Filthy cattle who labor in the cane fields under my command. For 2 days now it's rained. Because of that rain, you haven't worked. You've eaten my food, you've gotten my care, or my crops running in the fields.
Please, I can leave here, mistress, ma'am.
Quiet, Mondo. I only keep all of you alive because I save money using you to labor for me instead of native help. And fortunately, the silly superstition of zombies has kept all people away. And now you've dropped this rain, so I'm going to punish you for it. Before you go to the fields, you're going to feel the lash of a whip across your back. You'll see how to swing the
No, we can.
No.
Something bad may happen.
You idiots, come here. Come here.
They do not obey.
They must obey. Come here to me. I command you. What was that?
That voice.
They no longer obey your commands, Mrs. Nesbitt.
Who speaks? Who talks to me? Has one of you broken the spell?
I spoke, Mrs. Nesbitt. But I'm not one of your slaves.
Who are you?
Men call me the Shadow.
I can see no one. He speaks. I see no one.
I'm standing right beside you, Mondo.
No. No one beside me.
My hypnotic powers make me invisible to your eyes.
What do you want? Why are you here?
I have come to free these men from the evil spell that you've cast upon them.
No, you have no business here. Get out! Get out!
My power frightens you, Mrs. Nesbitt. Frightens you because it's far greater than yours.
No one has greater power than I. Mondo, seize this man. Listen for the location of his voice and seize him.
Yes, Mondo. Come on, seize me, if you dare.
No, Mondo, no like voice. Mondo, no want to be near voice. Mondo, run away from voice.
Mondo, come back here.
Your faithful Mondo has deserted you, Mrs. Nesbitt. He's not only deserted you, but he's also locked you in the cellar with the slaves you've so cruelly treated.
No.
And they're becoming restless, Mrs. Nesbitt. Perhaps they feel that the power you hold over them is not as strong as you've led them to believe.
No, let me out of here. Mondo, open that door.
That door will remain locked until you tell me the secret you've used to turn these poor creatures into living dead men. Slaves who move and act like animals.
I can't tell you that.
The men are becoming more restless, Mrs. Nesbit. Soon your power will wear off altogether. And when it does, I must warn you. It would be futile for me to attempt to save you from their mad rage.
No, no.
Hear them? You haven't much time, Mrs. Nesbit.
You can't keep me locked up in here. You must let me out.
I cannot release you till you tell me what you've done to these men.
All right, I'll tell you. I've been feeding them a drug. The secret drug that I discovered here on the island.
I thought so. Is there an antidote for that drug?
No, it's not necessary. Unless it's administered daily, the effect wears off. Now, please, let me out of here.
Not yet, Mrs. Nesbit. First, you must tell me who these men are.
Some of them are natives. The others are white men that are hired in the States.
And you gave them this drug and put them to work in your fields as slaves, isn't that right?
Yes.
And you created the superstition of zombies and the tom-toms just to keep away anyone who might be curious about your activities.
Yes, run me out of here.
I must learn one more thing. Is one of these men David Belmont? Answer me. Is he among them?
Yes. Please, open the door. You promised me three. Shadow.
I keep my promise.
Shadow. He's run between me and the door. The power in my way. Shadow. Shadow, are you still there?
Shadow!
Well, we better be getting the boat, Lamont.
Yes. I want to thank you again, Mr. Cranston, for all that you've done for Betty and me.
Oh, don't mention it, David. Goodbye, Betty.
Goodbye. And remember, we'll see you soon in the States.
All right, Betty. Bye-bye.
Watch your step, Margo. Right, getting into the launch. That's it.
All aboard, sir. We're going out to the ship now.
Well, Lamont, I can't say that I'm sorry to be bidding farewell to the dreamy little isle of St. Jude.
It wasn't dull, Margo.
Oh, I'm glad that the authorities cleared the men of any responsibility for Mrs. Nesbit's death.
Well, it was easy to prove that she died of shock. A shock induced by fear, the living dead men that she herself had created.
Yes. Well, I've settled one point in my mind anyway.
Oh? What's that?
The only zombies that I ever want to see again are the kind they serve in a nightclub in a long, cool glass.
Fail to listen to next week's program, The Oracle of Death, when Lamont Cranston encounters one of the strangest adventures of his career. After having received a death threat, Cranston is quietly waiting in his study for the killer to make his appearance.
8 o'clock. Well, we'll soon know. 4, 5, 6, 7.
Well, this appears to be one time that our young man's prophecy didn't work as he thought.
Well, I could use a good night's...
Yes?
Well, what do you think you're...
That's for luck, Cranston.
Today's program is based on a story copyrighted by the Shadow Magazine. The characters, names, places, and plots are fictitious. Any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental.
The weed of crime bears bitter fruit. Crime does not pay. The Shadow knows.
Keys! Wasn't that scary, huh? Oh, the Isle of the Living Dead. Well, after they finish with Nesbit, I guess you could call it the Isle of the Dead, huh? Really? But what did she expect? Like they say, so many servants, so many enemies, huh?
Really? Well, like the old proverb says, a servant is known by his master's absence, huh? But let's face it, what she had there was downright slavery. And where there's slavery, there's bound to be underground railroad. In this case, they railroaded her underground, huh? Yes. I wonder if any of her slaves came from Africa. Most likely, Zambia, huh? Oh, sorry. Of course, it wouldn't matter to me. I would never discriminate because someone's skin was different. Like, say, decayed, huh? Oh, that's what she said. Well, you can bet Miss Nesbitt proved the classic idiom, good help is hard to find, huh? Really? And help is just what you'll scream for in our next ultra-scary selection. It's Weird Circle and the Ghost is Touch. So scary!
Out of the past, phantoms of a world gone by, speak again the immortal tale, The Ghost's Touch.
Is it true that when you are very close to death, the dead are really able to reach out to protect you? I don't know, but Ralph Zant and I had been married only a few months when he died. We had been so completely and deeply in love that the memory of the happiness we had found is a thing which will always dominate my life. Well, John Stevens, one of Ralph's best friends, had invited me to spend some time with him on the coast where he had a large house. It was in the town where I had first met Ralph. Mrs. Stewart, my housekeeper and companion, went with me, and Paul Weston, another of Ralph's closest friends, was also there. But he lived in his own house nearby. I had been enjoying my stay there immensely. John had not been with us much, but Mrs. Stewart and I enjoyed the park and the beach. John had been particularly careful about my food, a fact which greatly pleased me. One morning, Mrs. Stewart and I had just returned from the beach. We were standing in the great front hall of the house when she brought up something I know had been on both our minds ever since we'd arrived.
My, it's quiet in this big old house.
Hasn't it been quiet, Mrs. Stewart? You know, I can remember when this was one of the liveliest houses in St. Anne's. And John was one of the jolliest men alive.
Sort of gives me the willies, Mrs. Zant. Something kind of brooding here. No one ever around this part of the house. The servants are all way off in the back there.
Does that seem strange to you? You know, I thought that maybe I was just disappointed, comparing it with the way I remembered it when Ralph and I were here together.
Oh, no, ma'am. There's something funny here. You mark my words. I didn't want to say nothing, hoping not to worry you. But Mr. John has acted so strange, too.
He's a lot more thoughtful than he ever was before.
And then, there's that funny smell.
Yes. I've smelled that, too. But I thought it was just my imagination.
And the strange way Mr. John looks at you after breakfast, when he gets up so solemn-like and goes up into that room at the head of the stairs. He never comes out again till dinner. What's in that room, anyway, Mrs. Zant?
Well, I don't know. It's a study of some sort, I guess, where John's doing some work.
You know, yesterday I got hunting for that smell, and I traced it right to that door. I sniffed all around there and tried to decide what it was. I heard something in there, too.
What?
Mr. John was in there. I could hear him muttering to himself. No words, mind you, just muttering. And every once in a while, it sounded as though he was stirring something in the glass. Finally, guess what he said?
Oh, Mrs. Stewart, I think you've been imagining things. We're letting ourselves get nervous over something that's probably nothing at all.
Well, he said, ah, at last. Now I'm certain this'll work. Just then he came toward the door, so I ran back to my room and shut the door.
Well, I don't think he'd mind if we went and paid him a visit. Then we can see what he's doing. I wonder if he's up there now.
Oh, my goodness, that startled me.
He's just the front door.
Why, it's Mr. Paul. I can see him through the glass in the door. I'll just let him in.
I
it takes these servants here so long to get from way back where they are.
Oh, hello, Mrs. Stewart. Is Mrs. Zant here?
Hello, Paul. Come on in.
Oh, why, Dorothy. What are you standing there like that for? You look worried, and as though you're just about to do something about it.
Well, Paul, as a matter of fact, we were just going up to pay John a visit in his study. There at the head of the stairs.
Study? Why, Dorothy, didn't he tell you what that is?
No.
That's a laboratory, and he's forbidden everyone to come in there, practically on pain of death.
Well, he hasn't forbidden me, and I'm going to find out what goes on in there. I think that was a little mean of him.
Oh, Mrs. Sand, do you think you'd better?
Certainly I do. And I'm going up now.
Well, I might as well get hung for a sheep as a lamb. I'll come along, too. Come on, Mrs. Stewart.
Well, you aren't frightened, are you, Mrs. Stewart?
There's no telling what we may find.
Well, it can't be too awful. John's no demon, anyway.
No answer. Maybe he's gone out. I'm going to look and see.
Be careful, Mrs. Zant.
Get out. I told you.
Oh,
Dorothy, come in. I didn't realize it was you.
Well, we're all here, John. We came up to pay you a little visit.
Fine, fine. Come on in, but shut the door. Hello, Paul. When did you arrive?
Just came in. Dorothy said she wanted to come up here. I told her we'd all been forbidden, but she insisted, so my curiosity got the better of me, too.
Well, that's fine. I'm really glad you did. This is a good day for me.
This is really magnificent.
Yes, Dorothy. What do you think of my private domain?
Well, it's big enough, I'll say that for it. It's a little frightening.
Yeah, don't smell so good to me either.
Mrs. Stewart doesn't understand experiments the way we do, does she, Dorothy?
No, I don't, Mr. John. And after seeing Mrs. Zant fooling with them dangerous chemicals, I don't know as I want to either. Oh.
What's that, Dorothy? You?
Why, yes, Paul, I've been doing some experiments. Just for fun, mostly, but it does take up my time since I'm alone so much. That's why I think it was so unfair of John not to tell me he had such a wonderful laboratory here.
Well, Dorothy, I've been saving that for later, until this experiment is well underway. I've been hoping we might work together very soon.
John, what are those tables over there? They look like...
They're dissecting tables? Yes, that's what they are.
Well, of course, if you're going in for anatomy on the side, I'm afraid you'll leave me way behind.
Why, no, my dear, quite the contrary. I had hoped you'd follow right along. I'm sure you will with this new experiment.
Well, you've got to tell us now what this experiment is. You've certainly got our curiosity aroused.
Now, I'll tell you, of course. I have finally developed a new formula. This is the chemical part, which will eventually make a subject absolutely impervious to pain. That is, I will be able to operate without the use of anesthetics. Perform any sort of operation I wish.
How does it work?
I feed small doses of a certain formula, a very dangerous one, by the way, to the patient in his food. Dangerous because while he's taking them, the patient occasionally falls into semi-conscious states in which he is very close to death. Then, when a certain stage is reached, there is one more dose which the patient must drink straight without any other food. Then the subject becomes unconscious of any pain whatever.
But what's the purpose of that? Surely the development of anesthetics.
But this, you see, leaves the scientists free to operate on conscious living animals without the stopping of some functions brought on by anesthetics. And this never wears off.
Have you ever tried it?
Several times, my dear, and with success. I am just waiting now to try my greatest experiment of the lot. To use my formula on the most complicated of living organisms, the human.
But, John, you're not going to go on with this, are you?
Well, certainly. Why should I stop now? Especially when I'm so near the final experiment.
Do you mind, John, if Mrs. Stewart and I go down to the beach? I'm afraid the air in here has made me a little dizzy.
That's a good idea, Dorothy. We'll come right along to walk with you.
By all means, go ahead. Do get plenty of fresh air, my dear. I hope you'll see more of the laboratory later. Much more.
I wondered then what it was in John's look that startled me. Or was it something in his voice? A chill of apprehension made me turn and hurry ahead of Mrs. Stewart out into the cool seashore air. I was sure that John was telling me something, saying something to me alone, and I was afraid even then to let myself believe what I thought it was. Mrs. Stewart and I walked through the little park that lay between the house and the beach. It was a place of many wonderful memories to me, the place where Ralph had first kissed me. We passed the tree where Ralph and I had stood that day, and Mrs. Stewart, bless her, knew what I felt as we came to the spot. She looked at me.
These memories aren't going to spoil your visit now, are they, Mrs. Zant? You know, there's a lot of things a person has to live with all her life.
Oh, no, Mrs. Stewart. My memories of him wouldn't spoil anything. They're too beautiful.
Well, I just thought from the way you were looking over at that tree, the one...
You know, I'm going over and touch that tree. Just for luck. I feel as though I need some luck right now.
Mrs. Zant! What's wrong? What are you looking like that for? As though you'd seen a ghost.
Oh, Mrs. Stewart,
Where are you? Mrs. Zant, can't you see me here? Well, you're looking at me as though you've gone blind. Mrs. Zant!
No, I'm not blind. I can see everything. The tree, the grass, the whole park. But you've gone. I can't hear you anymore. I can't see you. Mrs. Stewart!
You remembered, didn't you, Dorothy? You're not afraid.
Oh, Ralph. You're here. It seems as though I can feel your hand on mine. But I can't see you.
I'm right here beside you, darling. Always beside you.
You've been gone so long, Ralph.
I'm always beside you.
But I haven't seen you. I haven't been with you before.
Dorothy. Dorothy, darling. It can't be for long this time either. They're coming soon. They're on their way now.
Who, my dearest?
All of them. Don't forget the others. They'll be here. Don't forget the others.
Why can't I see you, Ralph, when I want to so much? I can still feel you. It seems as though you have your arm around me. Oh, Ralph.
Oh, Ralph. I'm here, though. Right here with you, my darling.
Why didn't you let me know before that we were so near to each other?
Because you had to come a long way to me first. And now it's time for you to know it, certainly. You already know why.
Are you here to protect me? You are. You are, I know it. But from what, Ralph? From what?
Dorothy!
Mrs. Sand! Oh, thank heavens, Mrs. Sand! You are, aren't you, Ralph? You will protect me. I'll come back to see you here, Ralph. I'll come back. Ralph! Where are you? Why don't you answer? Oh, Ralph, where are you?
Dorothy, it's all right. Dorothy, can't you hear me? Can't you see me?
Oh, Paul. Paul, it's you.
Yes, Dorothy. Do you feel all right?
Oh,
Mrs. Stewart.
Oh, Mrs. Sand. I ran and found Mr. Paul as fast as I could. You stood there looking straight at me and you wouldn't answer me. You didn't even see me when I put my hand up in front of your face.
Oh,
you gave me an awful fright.
Mrs. Stewart came running for us. She said you seemed to have gone into a trance.
I came as soon as I could. She's all right now, isn't she?
Yes, now she is. But it certainly is strange.
Not strange at all. In fact, rather to be expected.
Why, Mr. John, Mrs. Zant hasn't ever had anything like that before. You didn't even see how she was. Mr. Paul here can tell you.
Why expected, John?
Oh, perhaps the air in the laboratory upset her. Perhaps something she ate. Who knows? shock of Ralph's passing away hasn't really left her yet, has it, my dear?
I think we're imagining things.
I'm afraid that perhaps the food my cook has been serving has been a bit rich these past few days. I spoke to her about it this morning.
You all right now, Mrs. Zandt?
Oh, quite all right, thank you. I think we'd better go down to the beach.
I'll come along with you, Dorothy.
If you'll excuse me, I must get back to the laboratory. My dog has been acting rather strangely in the last few minutes. Something very interesting may develop. Will you excuse me?
Certainly, John. We'll be back shortly.
Don't hurry. Dinner won't be ready for a while, and that's all you need to be back for. I'll see you later.
Dorothy, I don't like this at all.
Are you afraid of something, Paul?
Mr. Paul means this funny spell you just had, and I agree with him.
It was very strange, but it was very wonderful.
Tell me, Dorothy, you know something about chemistry. Would it be possible for John actually to do what he says he has done?
Well, there are a great many strange things that can be done with chemistry, Paul. And I believe, yes, that a mind bent on such an insane purpose could probably develop such a combination.
But wouldn't it be very dangerous?
You're thinking of that spell I just had in connection with it, aren't you?
Well, he did say some strange things there in the laboratory.
And you may be very right, too, Paul, in suspecting him. I may already have been...
Dorothy!
Oh, Mrs. Sand, no. Please, let's go home today.
But, Dorothy, if you think...
No, Paul. Something happened when I was standing under that tree. I talked to Ralph.
But, Dorothy...
And I promised to go back to talk to him again tomorrow. You see, I have to stay here now, because I must talk to him again.
It isn't possible.
I may be in great danger, Paul. Even this minute, here with you on this sunny beach, I may be very near to death. But I want to see whether what I believe is true. Because perhaps I am so close to death that the spirit of the man who loves me can reach across the narrow space that divides us and protect me. If that is so, I will have discovered more than 1,000 insane experiments can prove. You see, I have to stay now.
But Dorothy, hasn't he protected you already? Hasn't he warned you?
No, Paul. He's waiting for something. Something else. I think I know what.
Didn't he say?
No, but there will be more. He told me to come back. He wouldn't have done that if there weren't more, would he?
Shall I have the main dish brought in? Are you both ready? I think you'll find the dinner very good tonight. Since I spoke to the cook this morning, she... Oh, here it is now.
Are you sure you feel well enough to eat, Dorothy?
Yes, thank you, Paul. I feel very well now.
The afternoon must... Oh, Rogers, I believe you've mixed the plates. That one is for Mrs. Zandt.
That's all right, John. I don't believe I'll have much dinner anyway. I'm not very hungry. Give Dorothy mine.
But I insist. Dorothy's is really quite special.
I... Listen. Oh, listen.
Is something wrong, my dear?
Oh, I... No, it was nothing.
But, John, does it really matter that much?
Perhaps John has had something special prepared for me, Paul. That's very nice of him, and it will be quite all right.
Thank you, Dorothy. We scientists seem to understand each other, don't we?
Dorothy.
It's all right, Paul.
At this dinner and going to bed early tonight, we'll fix Dorothy up splendidly, Paul. Wait and see.
Suddenly I had felt Ralph close to me again. It gave me a new confidence, a knowledge that whatever happened now, I was protected. I tasted nothing strange about the food, but I hadn't noticed anything in the meals before either. Ralph was waiting, I was sure now, until John became bold enough to spell his own destruction. The next afternoon, nothing could have kept me in the house. John had been in the laboratory all morning. And when I looked in, I noticed with a shudder that one of the operating tables was covered with clean white sheets. I went quickly out to the tree where I had been with Ralph the day before. It seemed a long time before I again felt that strange, numb feeling, as though my life had almost left my body. But...
Dorothy, my darling, you are here, under our tree.
How could I help coming, Ralph, when you promised that we'd be together again today?
I didn't promise, my dear. I couldn't promise that much. But remember, my darling, I am always near you.
Ralph! Ralph, where are you? You aren't here anymore. What was that? I'm frightened, Ralph! Look. Look. The grass is all beginning to burn and turn brown. Our tree is withering. Ralph! What was that? That great black mass coming toward me. John, where did you come from? I can only see your face staring at me out of that awful garden.
It's all right, isn't it, Dorothy? You're going to be all right.
Oh.
You said so last night, and you know it's true, don't you?
What's true? I don't know anything now. Where's Ralph? Oh, John, why are you frightening me this way? Ralph! Ralph!
You're going to be all right now, aren't you, Dorothy? All right now.
You're all right now, aren't you, Dorothy?
Oh, it's one of those spells again, Mrs. Zant. I'm frightened.
Mrs. Stewart and I came out to walk with you, Dorothy. We found you here again, just standing here, not seeing anything.
I'm going to call Mr. Paul. I don't like this. It frightens me. Mr. Paul will know what to do.
Shall we go back to the house, Dorothy? You'll feel better in a minute.
No, John. Let's just wait here a minute. Mrs. Stewart will be back with Paul.
But everything is ready at the house. I have some work waiting.
But, John, that darkness all around you. I can't see anything but your face again.
You will follow me back to the house, won't you, Dorothy? That's it. Of course you will.
Yes, John. Of course. I'll come with you. Everything here is brown and burnt. Park has grown so withered. It's horrible here now.
Come on, Dorothy. We'll go slowly. Come along with me. One step. One step. That's it. Come along with me.
Look at those birds over there. They're such big blackbirds. And they're falling, dropping right into the sea. What's the matter with them, John? Why don't they come up again?
Don't be afraid of them, Dorothy. Just come with me. One step. One step.
And look. Those awful things. Snakes. Snakes. Huge ones. And they're not moving. John, they're dead. Nothing here ever stays alive anymore. Oh. Oh, it's hot. It's hot. It's burning hot.
It doesn't matter now, Dorothy. Oh. Nothing will hurt anymore. One step.
Mm-hmm.
One step. Here's the door. The door to the house. Wait. Wait while I open it.
But John, it's open. It's open and it's all dark in there. So dark I can't even see your face anymore. John, where are you?
Right here, Dorothy. Come up the stairs. One step. One step.
But everything is so confused. I can't find the stairs. I can't find anything. It isn't real. Everything is mixed up. I've lost something. I've lost something I can't remember.
We're almost there, Dorothy. One step. One step.
I can't remember. It was... Ralph! Ralph! Ralph, where are you? I'm afraid. I'm alone here in the darkness. There's no one here. Even John has gone away now, and there isn't any light. Ralph! Oh, Ralph. Oh, Ralph, you are near me. I can feel you here now. I'm not alone.
It's near now. It's almost time, my darling. Here, Let me hold your hand.
I can feel your hand on mine, Ralph. But I still can't see you. It's so dark in here.
Come on, Dorothy. The stairs are there. One step. One step.
Oh, Ralph, your hand is helping me along. Hold me tight.
In here, Dorothy. Right in here. This is where we'll work, isn't it?
It's the laboratory, Ralph. This horrible, evil-smelling laboratory. Ralph, I'm afraid. Why don't you speak to me?
No, we're all right, Dorothy. Now we'll work together, won't we?
I'm thirsty. I'm so terribly thirsty. That heat. The park is so hot. It's all burned up. I'm thirsty.
Here, drink this, Dorothy. This will cure your thirst. You'll be all right. Nothing will hurt anymore.
I'm not afraid now, Ralph. I'm thirsty. Why can't I have a drink? It'll be all right.
That's right, Dorothy. Drink this. Let me hold it up to your lips.
I'm so thirsty. I'm going to... Don't let go of me, Ralph!
What is it? What happened? Mrs. Hanson up there.
Good Lord, what's got him?
He's choking to death. Something's strangling him.
John.
He's dead.
Oh!
He was just holding that glass to your lips, Dorothy, when we came in, and suddenly it shook out of his hand as though someone had grabbed hold of his wrist. A powerful hand.
It was like as if a ghost had reached out and knocked that glass out of his hand.
Someone did, Paul. Ralph.
But no one was here. It couldn't have been...
Oh, Mrs. Zant.
I was protected. I knew I would be. Ralph was able to reach across and save me, Paul. I know it.
Ooh, kids, that was scary, wasn't it? No, really, that one was scary. All of those who are not scared, scream. What's the matter, scared, huh? But really, kids, that weird circle is scary. The ghost is touch. Why, I was afraid that maybe they'd make us a mistake and scare me more with a boo-boo, huh? Like when he was offering her that drink and spilled it. I thought it was going to stain, huh? But it turns out the only stains our characters ever saw were the stained glass at John's memorial service, huh? But then again, the drink could have had acid in it and burnt through her dress. You know how that really eats at a woman, huh? But really, if anyone drank too much, it had to be John. I won't say he drowned in it, but he certainly suffocated because of it, huh? That's what he said. I guess it all goes to show you that he that drinks a little too much, drinks too much, huh? Hey, and maybe our heroine learned something as well. Whatever she thought was in the glass, now she knows there's no such thing as a free punch, huh? Oh, so much for the punch line. But enough of the evils of drink and on to the evils of love, as we join suspense in tonight's Too Perfect Alibi, So Scary!
And now, Autolite and its 60,000 dealers and service stations present...
Suspense. Tonight, Autolite brings you Mr. Danny Kaye in The Too Perfect Alibi, a suspense play produced and directed by Anton M. Leder.
Autolite resistor spark plugs, the spark plugs with a built-in resistor, are fast becoming the most popular plugs in America. And no wonder, for when you replace your old narrow-gap plugs with wide-gap Autolite resistor spark plugs, you can tell the difference in your car. Your engine will idle smoother, you'll have better luck with lean gas mixtures, actually save gas dollars. What's more, thanks to this built-in resistor, Autolite resistor spark plugs cut down spark plug interference with radio and television reception. And remember, friends, only Autolite offers car owners and truck owners everywhere the sensational advantages of resistor-type spark plugs. So be right with Autolite. Switch to Autolite. And now, Autolite presents Danny Kaye in a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Prince Charming. That's what Jack called me. And when he said that, something clicked inside of me. I remembered how in fairy tales the good prince always married the princess. And they lived happily ever after. Yes, happily ever after. Except that first there was the ogre that had to be taken care of. They were spending the weekend at my house in Croton, Catherine and Jack. The girl I loved and the fellow she loved. Oh, I admit it, I was stupid to let myself in for it. But I just couldn't help myself. I had to have Catherine near me. She was the loveliest thing on God's earth. Slender and blonde, with flecks of the purest gold in her hair, and eyes just as green as the sea. Jack was what the girls call a beautiful hunk of man, a one-time football hero. But now he was a clerk in a sports shop, a nobody. And why Catherine was so mad about him, I'll never know. After dinner Saturday night, we sat out on the terrace and looked out on the Hudson a half mile away. Everything was quiet, peaceful.
Jack, shall I tell him? After all, he is our best friend.
Sure, honey, might as well.
Tell me what?
We're getting married Monday, Sam.
Married?
Hey, I'm the one who should look like he's going to face a firing squad, not you, Sam.
I'm sorry, kids. It was just such a surprise, that's all.
How about it, Sam? Will you be the best man?
Sure. Of course I will.
Oh, good.
And congratulations, both of you.
Thank you, Sam, dear. You know, you're the sweetest, kindest, nicest, best-hearted person I've ever known.
Well, she means outside of me, of course.
Well, I do not, Jack Stewart.
Huh?
If it weren't for you, you big lug, I might even be marrying Sam on Monday.
Hey.
Say, I just thought of something. You like my place up here in Croton, don't you?
Like it? We love it.
Well, then it's yours.
Wait a minute, Sam.
I'm giving it to you for your wedding present.
Oh, Sam.
You always pick up the check, don't you?
What do you mean, Jack?
Everything you do makes me look cheap. You give Catherine a job and pay her twice what I make. You give us free theater parties, free dinners, and free weekends in the country. Now you want to give us a free house.
Now look, Jack, you've got me all wrong. I just want to give you kids a good start, that's all. I want you two to be happy.
Just like in the fairy tales, eh? The prince and the paupers, and good old Sam as Prince Charming as always. Well, no thanks.
That was when I got the idea. When he called me Prince Charming. That was when I remembered about the prince, the princess, and the ogre. And you know what happens to the ogre in all the fairy tales, don't you? You remember that, don't you? He dies. And he dies because the prince kills him. Catherine left with Jack, and I was miserable. I paced the floor for hours. All I could think of was that today was Saturday, and on Monday noon she would marry him. Two more days, and she'd be lost to me forever. I couldn't let it happen. I wouldn't. I had to get rid of him. What I needed was a weapon to defend myself with after I killed him. An alibi. A strong, unshakable alibi. A perfect alibi. It took me all night and gallons of coffee to figure that one out, but I did it. And the first thing Sunday morning, I phoned Jack in New York. I persuaded him not to hang up on me.
Well, what do you want?
Jack, ever hear of the Allegheny Sporting Goods?
Did I ever hear of J.P. Morgan?
Well, a friend of mine owns Allegheny.
So?
And he needs a sales manager. I've been arranging an appointment for you first thing tomorrow so you can get the job before you get married.
What?
It pays $20,000 a year. And you can buy your own wedding present.
Are you serious? Does he know I'm only a clerk?
Well, it's just a matter of selling yourself, Jack.
But I...
If you're free tonight, I'll be glad to give you a few pointers on the best way to approach him.
Well, that's great.
Look, Jack, I'm going to a party in town tonight. And if you can meet me around 10...
Well, Sam, I...
Here's the address, Jack. 3365 East 56th. I'll wait for you near the corner.
Okay, thanks. Just one thing, Sam. Don't tell Catherine about this, will you? You see, in case I get the job, I'd like her to feel I got it on my own. You understand, don't you?
Sure. Of course, Jack.
Oh, thanks, Sam. See you tonight at 10.
My hands were shaking so hard I could barely reach up to wipe the perspiration from my forehead. I was scared stiff. I was frightened because I had intended to ask him to keep it a secret from Catherine. Instead, he'd asked me. Everything about my alibi was working out perfectly. I drove to town. I went to the State Street ticket office and bought a ticket for the Staten Island Ferry. Then I went uptown to my apartment. I had lots of time, so I decided to treat myself. There was a nice, thick, juicy steak in the icebox, and I fixed it just right and rare. As I sat at the table enjoying the steak that cut like butter, I got an idea. A good idea. Just the thing. Eventually, it was time to go to the party.
Why, Sam Rogers, where have you been keeping yourself all summer, you dog?
Running a still on my mountain up in Croton.
Hi, Sammy.
Hi. I spoke to everyone I knew and a few people I didn't know. I made certain that practically everybody saw or talked with me sometime during the evening.
Hello, Sam.
Where are you rushing out to, Frank?
I want to hear the 9 o'clock news.
Oh, the news? Do you mind if I join you?
Not at all. Come along.
We listened to the news until 9:15. Then I got involved in an argument over Sir Royan's new play.
Of course he's mad, Sam. That's why he's so wonderful.
Before I knew it was time. 1 minute to 10. I slowly smiled my way toward the door and edged my way out of the noisy crowd without anyone noticing. I walked casually through the open door. Once outside, I quickly walked away from the house toward the corner. I stopped under a tree where it was dark to wait for him. Well, I was just in time. A car turned the corner. I stepped out the flag and froze. It was a police SWAT car.
Hey, why don't you watch where you're going?
My face was drenched when I stepped back on the curb. For the first time, I realized how easy it would be to make a slip. This time, I made sure it was Jack's car before I stepped out. Park here, Jack, under the tree. Huh?
Sorry I'm late, Sam. The ferries were jammed. And on top of that, I had an argument with Catherine.
Oh? What about?
Oh, the usual, you know. First, she brought up your house again. Then she was jealous about some girl I kidded with on the beach this afternoon. Didn't mean anything, but you know Catherine. We practically had a slugging match in the restaurant. She'll be over it by morning. Which reminds me, Sam, I'm awfully sorry about the way I blew my top last night.
Oh, that's all right.
You're still going to be my best man at the wedding, aren't you?
Oh, sure, Jack. I'll be your best man.
Oh, that's wonderful. Catherine was right, Sam. You are the nicest, sweetest guy we've ever known.
Oh, forget it, Jack. Now, suppose we sit in the back seat of your car and talk about your new job. Okay? Get in.
Okay.
And do you know that was the last word he ever said? Okay. There he was, lying in the back of his car, and sticking up out of the middle of his back was my favorite steak knife.
For Suspense, Autolite is bringing you Mr. Danny Kaye in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
Hap,
yeah.
Let me read you a wonderful Christmas thank you note I got from my Aunt Susie in Maine.
Why, I didn't even know you had an Aunt Susie, huh?
Well, you just listen to this, pal. Dear Barlow, She never could get my name straight. Thank you so much for those wonderful Autolite resistor spark plugs you sent me for Christmas.
Oh, no, you didn't.
Listen now, Hap. She says, Cousin Charlie, he's your third cousin once removed on your mother's side, you know, told me that Autolite resistor spark plugs are those popular new spark plugs that have a built-in resistor. And he said they have an extra wide Gark Spat.
What?
She means spark gap, of course, that helps make your car run slick as a kitten on skis.
I see where you inherit your famous figures of speech, Arlo.
Let's see. So Cousin Charlie replaced my old narrow gap plugs with my new wide gap Autolite resistor spark plugs, and right away I could see what makes people rave about them so much. I declare my car idles smooth as silk, runs better than a scared jackrabbit with a tailwind. And honestly, Barlow, I've been saving gas.
Well, Susie's got me woozy.
So, friends, when it comes to spark plugs, be smart, be choosy. Take your cue from Susie and mosey on down to your nearest Autolite dealer tomorrow and get your car a brand new set of those wide-gap Autolite resistor spark plugs. Remember, you're always right with Autolite.
You said it, Harlow. And let's get back to suspense.
And now, Autolite brings back to our Hollywood soundstage Mr. Danny Kaye as Sam in A Too Perfect Alibi. A tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
After I stabbed him, I watched him slump to the floor of the car. And that's all there was to it. The ogre was dead. And now the prince and the princess could live happily ever after. I pushed his feet into the car and slammed the door. I locked the car with the keys I found in the ignition and put them in my pocket. Then I eased myself back into the house. I picked up the thread of conversation just as if it had never been broken.
Well, that's the name of the game, kid, Jim.
You never should have held on to those two kings, Johnny boy.
Okay, Sam. Suppose you stop gibbeting and play this card shark yourself. He's got those things hypnotized.
Well, just step to one side, John, and I'll show you a few tricks an old yogi named Gunga Jin once taught me. I played Jin all evening with Frank Bostwick. And though I never did like him very much, somehow I felt warm and friendly towards him now.
Good night, darling.
Then around 12-ish, the party broke up. I waited till practically everybody else left. Then I bid my host goodnight, got into Jack's car, and drove off. I got to the Staten Island ferry slip just before 12:30. I was lucky. The traffic was still heavy. Nobody would notice me. I took out the ticket I bought in the afternoon and drove aboard. A moment later, we started across the bay. I could breathe again. I checked off another point in my alibi. If they ever faced me with a night shift ticket agent, he would have to swear he'd never seen me or sold me a ticket in his life. It was so easy, I felt like laughing. I turned and looked at him lying on the floor in the back. He wasn't fighting me anymore. My alibi had him beaten all the way down the line. Suddenly, two things happened to me at once. I saw the knife sticking out of his back. The ticket collector. I'd forgotten about him, too. I couldn't afford to have anyone remember me on this boat, and I had to get rid of that knife. I had to act fast. In spite of the sick feeling in my stomach, I leaned over the seat and yanked the knife out of Jack's back. His head jerked around and grinned up at me. I looked around for a piece of paper to wrap the knife in. There wasn't a scrap anywhere. I pulled out my wallet, grabbed two or three bills, and covered the blood-dripping blade in the bills. I got out of the car, jammed my tickets under the windshield wiper where he had to see it. And I scrambled through a maze of bumpers and fenders till I reached the rail. My heart sounded like a bass drum. I leaned on the rail and looked into the black water. Then I dropped the knife over the side.
Hey, I saw you do that.
What? What did you
do? Don't you know it's against the law?
What is?
Dumping paper into the harbor. You could get arrested for that, mister. You better watch your step or something.
Oh, thank you. I kept my head turned away from him so he couldn't get a good look at me. He'd never recognize me in a court of law, no sir. Anyway, he'd forget all about me 5 minutes from now. My alibi was still 100%. I got back into the car.
Minus all out.
landed, I drove a few blocks inland. I left the car in front of the house and walked back to the ferry. By the time I got home an hour later, I had lost all my fears. I felt wonderful again. I went right to bed and slept soundly for the first time in weeks. I slept so soundly, in fact, that they stood there ringing my bell for 5 solid minutes before they woke me up. I opened my door and saw 2 detectives standing there with an invitation to visit Inspector Vanelli of the New York Homicide Bureau. Then I remembered about last night. Inspector Vanelli was a slender, swarthy man who looked more like a successful businessman than a police officer.
You know Jack B. Stewart, Mr. Rogers?
Certainly. Why?
He's been murdered. His body was found at 9 o'clock this morning in a parked car on Staten Island.
What? I can't believe it. This was his wedding day. He and Catherine were going to be married.
Mr. Rogers, what was your relationship with Catherine Gilpin?
Inspector, I think I ought to tell you right off that I'm probably your best suspect.
You are?
Yes. Catherine turned me down for Jack. That probably gives me the best motive in the world for killing him, doesn't it?
Well, supposing you let me decide who had the best motive, okay, Mr. Rogers?
Okay.
All right, now, the best place to begin is at the beginning.
He kept me there hour after hour while the police stenographers crammed their pads with notes. Finally, late in the afternoon, one of the detectives hurried in and whispered something to him. Inspector Vanelli's hard face broke into a rocky smile.
Okay, Mr. Rogers, you're clear. But I don't mind telling you now, I was sure it was you.
Really, Inspector? Why have you changed your mind?
Well, we have 35 affidavits from responsible people swearing that you were at a party between 9:30 and 11:30 last night. And that's when Stewart was murdered. That settles it. You've got a perfect alibi.
I could hardly believe it. It had been so easy. Only yesterday, the girl I loved was miles away from me. Unattainable. Today, she was mine for the asking. No more rivals, no more competition. Gradually, she would forget Jack and turn to me. It would take time, I knew that. But I had plenty of time. I could wait. Catherine phoned me the next morning. And suddenly, I didn't have any time at all.
Sam, they've arrested me for Jack's murder.
They've what?
They've arrested me.
But they can't. It's just a stupid mistake, Catherine. Look, I'll call my lawyer and we'll get you out of there right away. But we couldn't. In New York, you can't bail out a person accused of murder. What could they possibly have on her? It was ridiculous. But the thought of Catherine in prison was pure torture for me. My attorney suggested I retain Simon Blade, the shrewdest criminal lawyer in the state. Blade investigated every detail of Catherine's story. Finally, after 2 of the longest weeks of my life, he called me in.
All right. Now, here's the district attorney's case, Mr. Rogers. She and her boyfriend had an argument in a public place, a restaurant. They argued about 2 things. 1, she wanted to take your country house for a wedding present, but he didn't. 2, he made a little goo-goo eyes at some blonde on the beach and she burned up. She tells him he's cheating on her. So then he burns up. He tells her to go marry somebody else and walks out.
Yes, yes, but how do the police know all this?
They have witnesses, Mr. Rogers, witnesses. Now, she says that after the fight she went home alone and cried on her bed. But the DA says she ran after the boy, rode out into the country with him, and stuck a knife in him for calling off the wedding.
Her word's as good as his, isn't it?
Certainly, certainly, and she's prettier than the DA, too, but, well, I'm not finished. It seems that the management of the restaurant bought 2 dozen new steak knives that week.
Steak knives?
Yes. The girl and the boy had steak for dinner, and the next morning one of the new knives was missing. The police took a sample knife down to the morgue, and it makes a perfect fit with the stab wounds in the cadaver's back. Now, all we have is her word that she didn't do it, and there's only one person in the world who can prove that she's telling the truth.
Who?
A corpse with 3 holes in it.
On On the day of the trial, I sat with Simon Blade and waited for them to bring Catherine in. And when she came in, she looked so young and so lost. I had all I could do to keep myself from jumping to my feet and telling them the truth. Then she saw me. Her eyes lit up and she smiled. And I smiled back. And somehow I felt sure it would all come out right, just as I had planned it. Simon Blade was wonderful in that courtroom. One moment wringing sympathy from the jury for Catherine's pale face. The next frankly exploiting her sex with a knowing eye. And when he strutted before a terrified witness, his barbs always hit the bull's eye.
And how did you know, sir, that the knife was missing from your restaurant?
We counted them and found one was missing.
You count your silver, huh?
Yes, sir.
What's the matter, Demos? Don't you trust your customer?
Blade forced Demos to admit that customers walked off with knives, forks, and spoons every day, that several persons had staked that knife, and that anyone might have taken that knife. Everything was going along fine. And then the district attorney exploded a surprise in our laps.
Do you recognize this handkerchief, Miss Gilpin?
Yes, sir. It's mine.
It's yours. And would you please tell the jury what made these stains on your handkerchief?
What? Blood.
Blood?
They're blood stains. But you mustn't
blood.
Think...
Whose blood?
It's Jack's. It's Jack's blood. But I'm not guilty.
Order! Order in the court!
If there are any more such disturbances, I shall order the courtroom cleared. Proceed, Counselor.
So, Miss Gilpin, you admit this is the blood of Jack Stewart?
Yes, He had a nosebleed. He always had them when he was excited. I loaned him a handkerchief.
A very convenient explanation. Shall I tell you, Miss Gilpin, what I think the real explanation is? I think you stabbed Jack Stewart.
No.
Then in your jealous rage, you struck again and again.
No.
Then calmer, you noticed that your hands were covered with blood. His blood.
No.
You wiped them on the handkerchief. This handkerchief, Miss Gilpin.
No.
And went to dispose of the body.
No.
The DA was very convincing. And the jury thought so, too. Because when they came in after 11 hours, they found Catherine guilty of murder in the first degree. We appealed the case and lost. I pulled every string I could to get a commutation from the governor. It was hopeless. I had to face it finally. I had killed Jack so I could have Catherine. But I couldn't have her now, and I didn't want to go on without her. I went to the DA and told him everything.
Mr. Rogers, are you trying to tell me that you killed Stewart to keep him from marrying Miss Gilpin?
That's right. Since I can't have her, I might as well confess. Will you arrange to have her released?
Look, Rogers, I know exactly what you're trying to do, but I've got no time for heroes. I've got 35 sworn affidavits in my files which prove that you couldn't have killed Stewart. I've got my conviction, and so far as I'm concerned, this case is closed.
You wouldn't believe me. And Catherine's execution was only a week off. I went to the newspapers with my story, but they wouldn't believe me either. One of them did send a reporter with me to see the people who were at the party that night.
Sam, it's wonderful what you're trying to do, but I can't lie about it, and I won't.
That was the kind of answer I got everywhere I turned. Then I tried to find the two policemen who'd passed as I left the house and the man who had seen me throw the knife off the ferry, but it was useless. I couldn't find one person who would believe me, not one. The next day, I made a last attempt to see Catherine. They wouldn't let me. But late that afternoon, I received a note from her. It was heartbreakingly full of all the things we planned and now would never do. And what hurt me most was the part where she said...
I heard all about it, Sam. And I love you for it. I love you for your foolhardy attempt to save my life at the expense of your own. Jack once called you Prince Charming, but he never dreamed what a prince you really are.
Even she. Prince Charming. Even Catherine wouldn't believe me. and that was harder to take than all the rest. And you don't believe me either, do you, friend?
Well, Mr. Rogers, it's very hard to...
Listen. It's 12 o'clock all over again, isn't it, Joe?
Why don't you go home like a good fellow, Mr. Rogers?
I can't sleep, Joe. I just can't sleep. How can I sleep where nobody will believe me? Joe? Why do the innocents always suffer in this world? Catherine was innocent. Why did she have to suffer?
Oh, you got it all wrong, Mr. Rogers. The innocents don't suffer, but the guilty. They're the ones. Take you, for instance. Supposing you really was guilty of Jack Stewart's murder, and supposing she paid for your crime, why, you'd have two lives on your conscience this very minute, Mr. Rogers. And you'd have been suffering for those two lives ever since the night she went to...
Yes, you're right, Joe. You're right. It is the guilty who suffer.
Say, Joe, how about that fella?
Him?
Well, he's been coming in here these 10 years now telling the same story to anybody who listened.
10 years?
Sure. And where do you suppose he's gone now? Another bar, most likely, to pick up a conversation with somebody else like you and live through it all over again.
But about what he said, do you really think he killed him?
Mr. Rogers? Him? Not on your life. Why, he's a prince of a guy.
Thank you, Danny Kaye, for a splendid performance. Mr. Kaye will return in just a moment.
Oh, your Aunt Susie must be mighty cold up in Maine this time of year.
Cold? Why, up Maine way, it's so cold they use icicles for andirons.
And do those wonderful Autolite resistor spark plugs feel the frigid finger of freezing temperatures?
Not on your life, because Autolite resistor spark plugs consistently give you smooth, dependable, on-the-spot performance. And remember, friends, only Autolite offers car and truck owners everywhere the sensational advantages of resistor-type spark plugs. So, with millions of car owners switching to Autolite, why don't you? Because you're always right with Autolite. And remember, Autolite means spark plugs.
Ignition-engineered resistor spark plugs.
Autolite means batteries.
Stay full batteries.
Autolite means ignition systems.
The lifeline of your car.
And now, here again is Mr. Danny Kaye.
Thank you very much. I feel a little better now, anyway. It's been a great pleasure for me to be here on Suspense, ladies and gentlemen, and I'm especially grateful to Tony Leader for letting me play the kind of role which you and I don't usually associate with me. It was a lot of fun, if you can call being a murderer fun. Well, next week, Radio's outstanding theater of thrills will bring you Dana and another gripping study in...
Suspense.
Danny Kaye will shortly be seen in the Warner Brothers Technicolor production, Happy Times. Tonight's Suspense play was written by Martin Stern with music composed by Lucian Morawek and conducted by Lud Gluskin. The entire production was under the direction of Anton M. Leader. In the coming weeks, Suspense will present such stars as Robert Montgomery, Fibber McGee and Molly, Ronald Coleman, Jane Wyman, and James Mason. Make it a point to listen each Thursday to Suspense, Radio's outstanding theater of thrills. And next time...
Remember, you're right with Autolite. So switch to Autolite. Good night.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Keys, that was scary. No, really, that one was scary. And that Danny Kaye, what a scary fellow. I bet he's going to be in a lot more scary shows, huh? Yes. You know, though, then again, maybe he won't be so lucky. After all, even in this story, he got everything but the girl, huh? Really, huh? Hey, you know, there's no such thing as a perfect crime. Someone should have told him that. In fact, it's perfectly meaningless, huh? Oh, well, I guess maybe this just wasn't one of Danny Kaye's days, huh? But he was in love. You know, he had to try it. But with love like that, who needs hate, huh? Really? No, really, seriously, I mean, love may be as strong as death, but I sure wish someone would tell Jack and Kathleen that, huh? Really? You know, some prince he turned out to be. A prince of darkness, maybe, huh? Oh, really? But that's how some people act when the stakes are high. They lower the stake knives, huh? Really? Hey, and what a shock that must have been to poor Catherine. Good thing she wasn't pregnant, or she would have had a miscarriage of justice, huh? Yes, yes. Well, kids, I've got to fly. So until next week, same bat time, same bat station. This is a count reminding you, two's company, three's a shroud, huh?
Device to you until next week.